All right. Hey, everybody. Alex Shaw, Jimbo Redman, and Chris C. With your Risk Matters podcast. And Chris is has been working at Woodfin which is a Generations Captive member for many years, 6 years, he says. Chris, thanks for hopping on.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you taking the time. We wanted to have you on for a few reasons. One is, you know, you just presented at the Generations Captive Workshop on Woodfin's Idea Network, on the continuous improvement program you guys have implemented and continue to evolve and have been doing so since 2017. Is that right? Maybe if you want to share a little bit about yourself, your experience at Woodfin, and then share that story with us.
Sure. So I started at Woodfin in 2018. As a safety coordinator, I had the privilege last year to be asked to be more integral, if you will, with our continuous improvement program, which our platform we call the Idea Network. And so I've been involved with that since January of last year. I have recently been asked to go back into safety as a manager, so still kind of wearing both hats a little bit, but to kind of give you just a little context to the Idea Network. So in 2018, our executive team went to a conference. They met the keynote speaker, Dr. Alan Robinson, and Dr. Robinson has written a couple books about continuous improvement and what that looks like. And so in having some conversations with him, he painted this picture. We, at any given time, have roughly anywhere between 12 to 1,300 employees. And so how he painted this picture was, if all 1,300 of your employees came to you with one idea, how much would that change your company? And the light bulb, boop, went off.
Yeah. Right?
Hence why we have a light bulb for our logo.
Man, so. You guys are great. By the way, you guys are really, and I've noticed this in a few companies, that some are really good when they come up with ideas and initiatives, the branding around that. You'll see notepad. Like my notepad that I carry to meetings every single day to other clients is the gray logoed Idea Network. Mm-hmm. And it's got the light bulb. You've got T-shirts. You've got, you know, wraps on the vehicles and in the offices, on the walls. And so when you guys go in, you go all in on this type of thing. There are a few other outfits that do the same, and I think it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, when our owner, Jack Woodfin, when he's passionate about something, everybody knows it, because to your point, I mean, it's full speed ahead, right? And so from having those conversations with Dr. Robinson and him painting that picture for our executive team, then obviously that led and just kind of snowballed, right, into the Idea Network. And we started off with, I think it was roughly 10 pilot teams. And how we actually made it work was our wrap shop had wrapped some literally metal sheeting, right? And it was divided into different areas. We had strategic goals that we tried to hit based upon your department. And then from there, we just used sticky notes, right? You'd write down an idea. You'd write down your name, the date you did it. Boom, it goes up on the wall. So in that section where new ideas, or what we call opportunities for improvement,
OFIs,
they would go into this section. And then each team meeting, we meet once a week for an hour. And we would work on current tasks that had got voted down. So it was a democracy. You know, everybody gets two votes. And if you really wanted to push your idea, you start talking to your team members.
So was the vision for this originally as simple as, hey, just imagine what 1,300 ideas could mean to your organization?
Absolutely.
And you guys just took that and said, let's figure out how we get that to happen? Or was there more structure and more mandate from management as to sort of how you should do that?
So, no, there was definitely structure from management, because obviously we wanted to keep track, right? We wanted to see what kind of trends we were having, who was actually participating, things of that nature. But the whole mindset behind it is – you know, 80% of companies in America use the trickle-down effect, right? And so what I mean by that is with our executive team at that time, we had four members. So four members trying to tell the plumbing apprentice, the electric apprentice, whatever it may be, hey, there's a better way to do your job. Well, that's kind of hard to take under consideration when they really don't understand what the tasks are every day,
mm-hmm.
right? So then the thought process is we need to go bottom up. And so we start at the level where whatever your tasks are for the day, not only are you going to see the problems before someone else would, but then you're also probably have a better idea of how to solve those problems.
Step back into the visual, the board, because they were basically whiteboards, and then you guys evolved into using a software platform, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But describe the makeup specifically of the boards, and when you visualize it from left to right, maybe top to bottom, what did that look like? And they're still in the offices today, even though
you've
moved on.
Yeah, there's still a few. So we wouldn't have changed this concept if it hadn't been for COVID, right? So then you can't meet and staying within 6 feet of each other, things of that nature. So that led us to a software. But prior to that, so kind of looking at the board from left to right, at the top, we would have an area where new ideas would go, new OFIs. And then to the right of that, that section was kind of broken into a couple of different areas. We had what we called escalated items. So let's say if a team member says, hey, we need this piece of machinery because it'll help us do our job more efficiently, more effectively, whatever it may be. Well, if that piece of machinery costs a couple grand, right, that's not something that necessarily we can just kind of struggle. You know, there's checks and balances mm-hmm. for that. So we had an escalated item area. So what would happen then would be an item like that would go into the escalated item. It would get kicked up to a strategy team that was created to handle these big OFIs, if you will, and then they would decide, yeah, that is definitely, you know, worth it. Or if they didn't, then it would get kicked up to our executive team, and then ultimately they would make
it. What would be the communication between understanding the issue and something like that escalation? So if I'm an employee and I go, hey, we need a ABC machine because it's going to help making this job a lot easier. Just the same with that disconnection of understanding the task from a top-down approach, would that sort of middle management team, if you will, would they involve that employee and go, well, how will that make it easier? And
yeah, absolutely. So, you know, they would want some feedback, right? So when it would get escalated, there would be, you know, some documentation that would be involved in that, right? So, like, what is the purpose? What is the why? And kind of go from there, so we could kind of justify, you know, yeah, this is definitely a way that not only can it make it more efficient, perhaps it can make things more safely be the procedure be done. So yeah, there was some consideration into that.
Let me ask you and step back again. So the team went and saw Dr. Allen Robinson speak. Naturally came back with this kind of spark. Where did the term idea network come from? Is that a Allen Robinson kind of staple, or was idea network, to your knowledge, was that something that Jack and the team said, that this is what we want to kind of brand it as? And then, so that's the first piece. The second is, when they came back, what were the next steps? What was the involvement to get this thing off the ground?
In regards to the branding, I really can't answer that. That was kind of before me. In regards to what happened next after having conversations with Dr. Robinson, he actually came to our one of our campuses, and through the pilot teams, kind of went through the process of like, okay, you have an idea, now what, right? Or if you're having a problem, how do we solve it? And so he gets into a lot of the techniques that Toyota uses, like the five whys and, you know, things of that nature to kind of help guide, let's make sure we're dealing with the root problem, not just a problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I could see if you didn't take that approach, then you could get really bogged down in symptom treatment.
Right.
Essentially. Yeah, that's helpful. So let's talk about maybe the evolution from the whiteboards onto, you know, COVID hits and you have to move away from that. And so, and now you're moving away from that, it sounds like, potentially. So,
correct. So, and just to go back to the boards, because I don't know if I finished explaining the layout of the board. So, so like I said, left to right from the top was an area where we would put new OFIs. Then to the right of that, we had an escalated area that we just discussed. And then we also had a parking lot area where that's more or less where after an escalated item got sent to the strategy team, if they needed to bump it up to executive teams, then it would kind of go into parking lot and kind of sit there just to wait. Or we also use the parking lot as an opportunity to where if we put something in place, if we implemented, you know, a procedure or something like that, we could revisit that, you know, let's say in 6 months. So we'd keep it up on the parking lot so it kind of stayed on the forefront, if that made sense. And then from kind of the middle down, it was just sectioned off by lines, very similar to legal paper, if you will. And then once a OFI got voted down, it would be put in that area along with what is the action item to solve this problem or to implement this idea. And then each week we would revisit that. And the idea was we want to break down action items into small bits, right? We don't want action items to go for months on end because, one, you know, it's cumbersome. Mm-hmm. Two, it's you lose momentum. It's like, man, I'm still working on this. So the whole point of the five whys in getting down to that root cause is, hey, let's do action items that we can get done in a week. We feel like we're actually accomplishing something and we're making progress, right? And then from there, once an action item got completed, if that completed the OFI, then that got documented in an Excel form, and that's kind of how we're kind of keeping track of things and stats and who was participating and things of that nature.
Okay, that's great. I mean, that's a great visual representation. Thank you. And talking through that is really helpful, and it made me think. You said who's involved in that. I know you mentioned each department had teams. How were the and we'll get to the software piece. I'm hitting you with a lot of questions, but how were the teams selected? Who was selected? Who was involved? You've got 1,300 employees. That's a lot of folks to have involved. So I'd imagine you had to be somewhat selective about who was able to get engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of it was based on department size. So if we had a department that had, let's say, 10 to 15 folks, pretty much everybody was on the team. If it was a department, let's say like our residential service department that has roughly about 60 technicians, then we would have a team of about 8, and we would rotate them in and out about every 6 months to a year, depending on the department. We kind of left that up to the managers and the supervisors of each department. Mm. But for the larger departments, it was, okay, who wants to be on this? And then, of course, you know, you always have folks that are like, hey, I want to try something new. And so they believed in it, and they jumped in. And then, of course, you have some that you, you know, not so excited about because people don't like change. But what we kind of noticed from that then was, okay, how can we make a mix, right? How can we get the folks who are super bought in mixed in with folks who might just need a nudge and kind of show them the value of what we're trying to accomplish here and then kind of use that as a quote-unquote mentorship, if you will.
Well, to that point, one of the things you mentioned is that, you know, there are a lot of people in organizations who don't like change. And I think not to paint the construction industry with that, but there are a lot of people that have been in the construction industry a long time who are very set in their ways and have a sort of belief about how the job should be done. And I could see some of the ideas that come up sort of bucking up against that. Have y'all experienced much of that? And what's been sort of the how's that worked? And, you know, what have been the workarounds and obstacles and so forth that's sure. around that?
Yeah, no, there's definitely, you know, it doesn't matter what any company implements. anywhere, right? You're always going to have that group that is just very tough to get that buy-in. And I'll be honest with you, I was one of those. So when we started this program and we're sitting through the chain or sitting through the training and we're talking about what we're going to do and how it's going to flow, and I'm just like, what is the point of this, right? Then you get involved. And what really kind of changed my mind was, so each team would have a facilitator and each team would have a scribe when we were utilizing the boards. And then that would rotate based upon your department. So in our department, it was every year. So once I was voluntold to be a facilitator, then it's, man, I got to do this now. So I'm doing it, but then I'm starting to see, you know, as I'm going through and preparing for each team meeting, there was change happening, and it was positive change, right? And so then that started the belief system for me. Hmm. Now, from there, obviously, I continued to buy into it enough to where I fooled somebody into moving me over there. But with that being said, then that kind of became my passion, if you will, is to help, to your point, Jibbo, the folks that just really don't see it. How can I engage that person and kind of lead them along, right?
So do you think most of the resistance, I mean, we see this, but most of the resistance to any kind of new initiative or new idea even is just that nothing will come of it. And so, you know, organizations engage people and take their time and they talk a lot and they say, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And then they don't.
Right.
And so, you know, your natural bent, it sounds like, was a little bit like that. Yeah. Like, why are we doing this? Nothing's going to come of it. And then through the process of it, it really, your light switch went on and you were kind of like, no, actually, I'm seeing stuff happening. They believe in this. Mm-hmm. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was, to kind of give you a comparison, so when I learned how to swim, my father threw me in the deep end and it was sink or swim, right? With love, you know.
Drowning with love.
Yeah, right. So
rescue swimmer nearby.
That's right. But you see the point though, right? It's like sometimes you just almost have to be thrust into it.
Right.
And then from that standpoint, like how do I make it bearable? And then this isn't actually that bad. And then you started seeing that process there. And to your point, Jimbo, the whole perception of things, right, when we talk about change. So to kind of give you an example, so when we do our orientation, we lead off with 2 hours of continuous improvement. I mean, we sell this or try to sell it to our new team members. And I always integrate in there, show of hands, who likes change? No hands go up.
Hmm.
Which I follow up with, well, why are you here? You had to change something to get here, right? You had to leave another job to come here. My point being is change isn't always bad. Hopefully you're excited to be here, right? And just to kind of get that mindset that change isn't always negative. Change usually is actually positive, but it's our perception of that.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think some people have change fatigue. And for good reason at times. We have the good fortune of interacting with businesses where, I mean, you see them, they're changing their payroll or their accounting, you know, their accounting, their HR, their communication, you know, they're using Zoom and then they're using Microsoft Teams and now they've got Slack and now they're using the Google version.
Right.
And you see employees to some degree get whiplash because at times, in truth, there is an arbitrary nature to change. You can have a manager who reads a book who goes, we've got to change things completely. And at the end of the day, you'll see what folks do often isn't actually impacted. The work isn't impacted. The blocking and tackling, the basics, all that kind of stays the same. So it's almost much ado about nothing. And the cautionary tale in that is that in you all's case, and in many cases, if you just buy in and give it a good try, you can see some significant, have a pretty significant and profound experience. But it does, I think that's why, you know, we just did a select partners workshop where we talked about hiring, recruiting, and retaining. And I kind of broke it down into three buckets. It's the old Confucius, you know, I hear and I forget. I do and I, or you know, I see and I remember, I do and I understand. And so the three buckets would be the screen, and then the show. Like, what do you show people? Do you take them on a tour when you interview them? And then the do is the experience. Is there integrity in what they experienced in the screen mm-hmm. and the show with the do or the experience? And what I love is that you guys, I don't want to say indoctrinate, but you, I mean, right off the bat, their first experience on the job is, and I've sat through your new hire orientation, and it's really, really good, the old and the new. And you hit on that continuous improvement piece. It's very similar to the presentation he gave at Generations. It is motivational. It's insightful. It makes you change the way you think about things. It's there's a lot of sleight of hand in there. It just shows you that it's all about changing the way you think about this type of thing, and it can be really powerful if you do that. And then they get out onto the field, and it's reinforced out there because it's just a lifestyle for you guys. That's, I think, the comparison I was making earlier is really you think about a company that embraces a change, but at a very basic level. I mean, that's why I think if you're going to change, you go all in most cases, with the branding, with the new hire orientation, and you guys have done a really good job of that.
Yeah, we've and we stress this in our orientation, which is. And I believe I made this comment in the Generations presentation is, you know, regardless of how many laptops we have, regardless of how many tools we have in our warehouse, regardless of how many vehicles we have in our fleet, at the end of the day, all that stuff collects dust without what? Without you.
People, right? Yeah.
So whether it's safety, whether it's continuous improvement, whether it's – it doesn't matter what it is. There's going to be some kind of human interaction somewhere, right? And so tying that into, like, our core values of humility, integrity, and respect, right? How do we demonstrate that, obviously, not to just our customers, but to our team members as well? Because everybody brings something to the table, right? We want everybody to utilize their voice.
Jimbo brought a broken foot to the table today. Are you wearing your boot?
No, I'm out of the boot today.
Nice.
There we go.
Two days, I'm really not supposed to be walking upstairs, so I took the elevator, which I don't really know how I feel about that, but whatever. I will embrace the change out of a boot. I can assure you that.
See, we just converted someone.
There you go. Man, I'd love to see how many people you've converted, but I cut you off. Well, let's take a few more minutes. I want to hit on the software that you guys embraced. And mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about this today, but then I want to ask your take on which one was better, the software and having it kind of in the computer mm-hmm. versus having it out on the board. So maybe talk through this, leaning into the software, what you did with that, and where you guys are now, and then your kind of conclusion about which one is better or just the strengths and weaknesses of both.
Sure. So when COVID happened in 2020, we had to make some changes. By that point, we had pretty much fully implemented the IDEA Network. At that time, I believe we had roughly about 45 to 50 teams. And so we had to figure out something, right? I mean, if we can't stand together in front of a board, what were we going to do? And so we found the software called Kinexus, which is just, it's a, you know, project management software, but they were very understanding in what we were trying to accomplish. And so in building the platform for us, it was very easy in regards to they were very helpful. We met with them every week. We unfortunately have just left using that software. Mm-hmm. As far as a con, it did get a little cumbersome in regards to the documentation, right? So, you know, if Jimbo comes up with an idea like, hey, we could do this process this way and it would take 5 steps out of 15 and we could get it done quicker. The problem then became was you almost had to write a journal, if you will, on, well, how did you get how did you get there, if that makes sense?
Right.
And so that became discouraging to some folks because it's like, goodness, I got to do all this. Hmm. Why can't you just take my word for it?
Yeah, and a sticky note is as easy as...
Exactly.
Usually I do know how to take something from 15 to 5 steps, but it turns out not being the way to do it right.
But I guess you can kind of see the point I'm trying to make there. So, you know, when things kind of become, you know, a little more lengthy than probably what they need to be, that can be a discouragement to folks who are kind of sitting on the fence of, is the juice really worth the squeeze?
Yeah. No, that makes total, I mean, it is just a reality that if you place even minimum barriers in front of folks towards an objective, then in many cases they'll quit before they even get ahead. I mean, it's funny to ask people, were you an extra credit type of guy or gal growing up or not? And it's funny to be an adult now and hear people's responses.
Right.
You know, because sometimes I was an extra credit, you know, I can get, it depended on what the reward was.
Right.
But there were people, it didn't matter what the reward was. If they could get an extra point, they would do an hour's worth of work. And you go, well, Katie, you got 100 on the test. What do you need 101 for?
Right.
Whereas other people, and I would say the masses of people, so the masses of people are going to go, yeah, you just added a step. And so I'm probably not going to be as inclined to share my idea because I know what waits for me is kind of an administrative tax.
Exactly.
And I'd rather just transact.
One of the things I hear there, and this is, again, this is sort of a blind impression because I have no idea how that software implementation went or what the pitfalls of it are, but I do think that sometimes there's this idea that you can automate things and digitize things, and there's not a perfect platform to do that, and so you get these sort of, you know, project management software or accounting software or something, and they're like, oh, well, we can help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a natural sort of thing, and it becomes awkward because it never was really designed to do that, but they're trying to accommodate that, and then you kind of learn, like, well, it's probably better with sticky notes and whiteboards.
Right.
For whatever that's worth, probably nothing, but...
No, it's a great point. And, you know, some of the other pros also, you know, with that software, we were able to, you know, track trends, right? We were able to see how many OFIs have been entered monthly by department, by, you know, we could get super granular in a lot of the information that we wanted, which can be a little bit more difficult, obviously, when you're using sticky notes and you're trying to transfer some of that information to an Excel sheet or whatever that may look like. So I will say this, though, using the boards, it was just a different feel, right? You know, when you're actually interacting with folks. So, and what I mean by that is, so when COVID hit and we went to the software, everything was done on Zoom. Then once, you know, some of the regulations kind of eased up a little bit, then we started meeting in conference rooms and just, you know, throwing it up on the screen kind of thing. And it was fine. But it's just something a little bit different, old school.
Well, right? I'm sure there was somebody you know, it seems more, I can't put my finger on it either, but it feels, I'm not trying to lead the witness here, but I had this thought about 15 minutes ago. Because I've been touting the value of KineXus to others and saying, whatever platform you use, it doesn't have to be KineXus, just some sort of mechanism for project managing ideas. But there is something, I love a whiteboard. I love the physicality of it. In that room on that day, there was probably somebody, there's these ideas coming back and forth, and you've got somebody putting the stickies up there and somebody else putting the other sticky up there. It's far more interactive than
you can't get away from the notion that the best ideas and innovation were put on a cocktail napkin as sort of the origin story.
Right.
Like there's just something to that is exciting. And the way I think about it is like, you know, we started this like sketching it out in the conference room, whether it's a whiteboard or a piece of paper or a cocktail napkin. And then it grew, and now sort of here's a whole new paradigm of how we do this task, or we innovated this process. And so I think, you know, again, not to What'd you say?
Lead the witness.
Not to lead the witness, but there is something to that. And I think that's part of the journey that you guys are on, is y'all are still figuring that out.
Right. And let's be honest, there's a reason it's called continuous improvement, right? It's constantly changing, evolving. It's continuous. So with that being said, it's one of those things also where depending on how and every team would do something different. You know, we had teams that would make it a competition, right? You know, you only threw up 2 Ophies this week. You know, I threw up 5. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you could really utilize that. And then from a safety aspect, during our safety committee meetings, we would actually turn that also into somewhat of an idea team meeting, because as we go through incidents that may have occurred, inspections, things of that nature, that would be the time to, like, okay, so we had this incident, we found out the root cause by discussing this through the committee, so what are our next steps? What are the next tasks to put into place so this doesn't happen again? And so from there, it really did kind of turn into an idea network team meeting.
One of the things that I, so the concept and the practice, the exercise is compelling in its own right, but then you always have to go, well, yeah, what was the result? Like, what's the consequence? And just at a very high level, from a risk performance perspective, from a performance perspective, you guys have done really, really well, comp, auto, et cetera. But I am curious about, you have this chart you put up in the new hire orientation. You shared it at Generations about the number of ideas. Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit about that? And then maybe we can talk through a couple brief examples of how this is manifested. Sure. Some of the ideas that have been run through and implemented.
Sure. So we, I think to date, we're at roughly 14,700 and some change in regards to opportunities for improvement since 2018. I would say 2019 is pretty much when we were fully implemented. Now, granted, some of those are probably things that were just kind of thrown on the board that maybe didn't carry a lot of weight, if that makes sense. But at the same time, the whole point of this is, how do we get our folks engaged, right? How can we utilize what they have that nobody else has? And from there, how do we get them to understand also that not every idea has to be this big, grandiose idea, right? That, hey, Jack's going to start a new division because of this idea. 1%, right? get better 1% a day, or 1% every day, and you will see change, yeah. Right? And so that's kind of the mindset, you know. It doesn't matter what it is. And to give you an example, and we use this example in orientation as well. So we had a team member who at the time was having a difficult time trying to figure out how much PTO time they had, right? They just wanted to take a vacation day, a week, whatever it may be. At that time, we were old school. We're using like Excel and some, you know, platform that's not, you know, that was pretty archaic. Right. And so you had to call, you know, numerous people to get there. Long story short, that OFI led to us getting the software Paycom for our HR needs. And, you know, you're talking, I mean, anybody that has dealt with software lately, you know, you're talking 70 grand a year or whatever the cost is. I mean, it's expensive, right? But how simplistic was that OFI? I'm aggravated that I can't figure out how much time I had to take off. And that led to a software that affects literally every person in our company.
Well, we think about that in terms of event learnings after incidents. So one of the things is we've navigated that process, which is kind of a continuous improvement idea, networking type of interaction that lasts hours to days. What we found that's so compelling is that you're kind of learning about an event or an injury, an accident that happened, but you learn things along the way that you had never anticipated learning. Like, why was this guy injured falling off of scaffolding? Well, you would think that was directly tied to the scaffolding. Actually, it was an inventory issue and a warehousing logistics and management issue, an inventory management issue. And so you go, man, that's a lesson we didn't really think we'd learn, but we did. I do want to go back to the chart you shared, and I think you made a comment around like 14,700 or 300 ideas or OFIs have been presented, but I think this was dated, so a few months ago, but at the time, I think it was somewhere around like 13,000 or 12,000, but of those, it was somewhere around over 10,700 had been executed. So you had all these ideas. And what I love in your new hire orientation is you go, look, here's the number of ideas that we have. Here are the number that have been executed on. If you're an employee here at Woodfin, there's a pretty good chance if you got an idea, something's going to come of it.
Yeah, so to your point, right now we're at an 87% completion rate. So when someone puts in an OFI,
that's pretty good.
And then you also have to keep in mind.
I thought about 30%.
Yeah.
And then also keep it in mind that this is constantly working, right? So it's not that the other 13% just said no to, because that's one of our values, that nothing can be said no to. It gets escalated to Jack at the very end of this. So, and what we mean by saying no, if I can give an example. So we have multiple convenience stores. At some of our convenience stores, we have car washes. Well, at one particular one, we do not. And we constantly get asked, hey, do you have a car wash? Do you have a car wash? So that became an OFI. Because let's face it, customers are going to be the first ones to tell us what you need, right? So, hey, utilize those OFIs. So long story short, you know, that becomes an OFI. Obviously, that's something that's going to have to be escalated right off the get-go, right? Because, I mean, you can't just build a car wash for a couple hundred
bucks. What? I mean, come on.
Exactly.
So, yeah, just, yeah. Great idea. We'll start on that tomorrow.
So it gets escalated up.
There's a hose around back.
That's right. Our real estate team, they take a look at the property. Unfortunately, there's not enough room for us to build one. So then we had to come up with another idea. So technically, we said no. But then we did come up with some other ideas. Some of it was just, hey, here's some point of interest flyers, right? Sorry, we can't help you find a have a car wash here for you, but here's one right around the corner, something like that. Obviously, that's not the ideal way, but that's how we handle things. We don't just say no; we ask why.
Well, it is a continuum. And there are a few examples that I can think of that I've been around. I mean, one is the Little Giant ladders. I remember being in a meeting with, I think it was a home team, and they said, you know, there was an injury, I think, and part of the conversation was around, well, we have to carry around 2 to 3 ladders, and sometimes we just don't want to load the extra ladder. So you find yourself in these kind of situations on occasion where you don't have the right ladder, but you don't want to have to carry around 3 or 5 ladders every day. And then somebody brought up the Little Giant ladders. Mm-hmm. Look, it's heavier, but you can keep it in the van, so you don't have to load it up and down off the top of the van. And it's got every configuration, so you can use it in any situation you run into, with the exception of, I think, like one. There's like but, you know, Jen was in there, and she said, well, let's look at it from a numbers perspective, and if we can make it make sense, let's continue to learn and let's continue to talk about it. And so ended up running that out, and the feedback from folks, the last I heard, was almost everybody was really happy about having them. They're a little heavier, but it's solved an efficiency problem. It's solved a risk management issue, and also I think it's a little cheaper to have one ladder, even though that one itself is a little bit more expensive than 4 or 5. Right. The other one that comes to mind is the for the C-stores, the trash cart. Which, you know, we're still working through, but I love that it's not like, okay, here we've got a need, here's the product and the solution, now we got to move on. It is a process that's lasting months and months, but at the end of it, maybe we get nowhere, but the potential is that we have employees who no longer have to pick up these heavy trash bags. This thing hooks onto the dumpster, and, you know, through a simple kind of hydraulic, or it just lifts up and...
Right.
Dumps into the trash, and then you take it off and unhook it and move on. And there are countless examples like that. The home team software that they switched to, which all of this, if you had to put a theme over it, what's so compelling to me is the amount of just buy-in you've got from people because they have equity in the decision-making process.
Right.
They've got ideas. They get to hear about the progress. They get to contribute to it. Smaller little steering committees form as a result. And you see these things with an 87% completion rate just bear out. And I think that's a really compelling story that continues. And I'm excited to see how it evolves and improves over time.
It's awesome.
Well,
I mean, I think it is admirable because I think where most companies fall down is they elicit feedback from their employees. They're looking for ways to ask for feedback for their employees. They get to that point and then they actually don't have a process or a mechanism to process that feedback. And so it dies on the vine, and then employees become apathetic, like, oh, here's another initiative, and they're not going to do anything about it. So to have tangible examples, and I think, you know, I was going to ask you, and I think you made a good point. I was going to say, like, hey, do you guys rate those ideas after the fact? Like, there's 5-star? Like, that was a 5-star.
In their world, it would be 7 stars.
Or what, 7 stars. But then when you talked about the, you know, I can't figure out my PTO, which led to a whole new, you know, HR or payment software, I started to realize that, you know, I bet that payment software solved a lot more problems than people figuring out their PTO.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a lot of what we see every day is which people fail to estimate. People fail to account for just how much a very small idea can solve a lot of problems. And we see that in the risk management world all the time is, you know, people, we tell people, hey, just engage your employees, ask for their input a little bit more, and they discount it. But yet they're missing some of the sauce that comes with that. So, kudos to you guys.
No, that's the beauty of continuous improvement, right? Is like those opportunities where you solve a problem, but then how many more problems did it solve? And we try to stress that in orientation with some of the activities that we do, especially like with organization, very simplistic activities. But at the same time, it proves that point, right? Like when you get organized, just using that for the example, not only do you know when you need something, but you know when you're getting low, you know where everything is. It solves all these problems,
right.
And it's just that, you know, that short-term hit for that long-term gain, right? That's what we're all looking for.
Yeah, well, that something I heard years ago, and it is so true, is that positive decisions compound in a positive direction, negative decisions compound in a negative direction, and momentum in business compounds in either direction you choose. And so you guys have chosen a path of compounding interest in the direction of ideas. And I'm really excited to continue to see how that evolves and to learn over time from walking alongside you guys as you live this out. So thank you for, we got to tag you in for another presentation with another group.
Sure, anytime.
Talented guy. But thanks for taking the time today in the midst
of... My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
...of a lot of busy activity for you and your team.
And it's a lovely fall day, so
thank
if you
God
can get outside, it's probably better to be outside than in a plush recording studio.
All right. Well, y'all, thanks for listening in. Hope you have a great rest of the week, and take care.
See ya.